You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community. And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, January 31st, 2018.
The only reason that we even have any effort to stop the gerrymandering and get fair redistricting is because of citizens calling their representatives, their state representatives.
Coming up later in the program, former Bloomington mayor and redistricting advocate Tommy Allison speaks about Senate Bill 326, which is currently up for amendments in the State House. Allison and the Indiana League of Women Voters are pushing for the redistricting electoral districts by an independent, nonpartisan commission. And WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Allison later in the program in today's feature report. The City of Bloomington Planning and Transportation Department is hosting a series of public meetings this coming Monday, February 5th, through Wednesday the 7th. The Bloomington Transportation Department Development Manager James Roach says the meetings are an opportunity for local commissions to receive feedback on the city's preliminary unified development ordinance. Roach says a Colorado-based consultant firm will be present to receive input from the commissions.
We're calling these kickoff meetings. So we've hired a consulting company out of Denver named Clarion Associates, and they're going to be in town for 2.5 days. And in those 2.5 days, it's going to be back-to-back-to-back meetings. And they are soliciting input. They are introducing themselves to people that might be interested in the city's development laws. They are listening to what people have to say. It's just a starting point. You know, nothing's been written. No research has been done. It's just here we are. Here's what we're doing. We want to know what the community issues are. And they're going to be very tight. And these boards and commissions are going to give some ideas. And they are open to the public to attend, but there won't be public comment at these meetings. There is a public meeting on Tuesday, February 6th. At between 6 and 7:30 at the Transit Center at 3rd and Walnut. So that's the opportunity for the public to meet the consultants and the public to give them their feedback.
Roach says the upcoming meetings between city commissions and the UDO consultants is just the first step in the long process.
So this is a year-long process. And maybe even longer. So there's going to be lots of opportunities. There'll be many public hearings. There'll be many public discussions. Those meetings are not scheduled yet. The only ones that have been scheduled so far are these early next week. You know, again, this is just initial discussion and feedback. But the future draft documents will be on the city website. It will be at bloomington.in.gov/UDO/update. They can watch the process there. You know, I would say anyone that's concerned about development and development patterns and downtown and neighborhoods, anyone that's interested in land development laws should certainly become involved.
The Unified Development Ordinance governs land use and development throughout the City of Bloomington's planning jurisdiction. The UDO was originally adopted in 2007, but has been recently amended to include several new provisions. The updated version of the UDO is effective as of June 6, 2016. The new UDO and official zoning map are available for download on the City of Bloomington's website.
The Monroe County Convention Center Advisory Board is voicing its commitment to public input as plans for expanding the convention center move forward. Board member and Bloomington Deputy Mayor Mick Reniason says the expansion project will have a wide-ranging effect.
Anyone that lives anywhere near here is interested in, and so we should use every mechanism we can to make sure there's plenty of public comment.
The board discussed the importance of gathering comment in its meeting today. The county chose Sun Development Corporation through an RFQ process, and the developers have already provided an initial design for the new convention center. Reniason says the advisory board has a role to play in leading the public as the project progresses.
The step of design input via whatever mechanism our consultant, you know, does as part of their professional contract services, between now and then, we need to let the public know that that's coming. It may not be next month or the month after, but as we get steps checked off, hand those off to the commissioners or and others that have to approve them, we just keep updating. I think this body ought to continue to say, here's what's next and here's what's after that as best we can see it. And as those deadlines change for reasons we won't all be able to control, we just keep updating folks that way through the mechanisms that we have.
Advisory Board Chairman John Weikert expressed confidence about Sun Development's ability to gather and incorporate public comment.
I know that when I checked the references for Sun Development in the projects he was involved with in Plainfield and Hendricks County, they were extremely complimentary of how Sun had engaged the public in conversations about design and what what their project should look like. So I think that's part of what we also might want some input from Sun. How have you done this before? How have you engaged the public? How have you sought this input? But I think clearly these things happen in public meetings. And, the city's had, and I'm going to forget the word, charrettes.
Charrettes.
Where the public's had an opportunity to come to various meetings at various times during the day in various locations and provide input. And I think certainly we can do all of those things.
Also, Weikert is asking board members to review an existing list of stakeholders to see who might have been overlooked.
You know, I know our current list has included the Chambers of Commerce of Ellettsville and Bloomington and the BDC and the Neighborhood Associations and the Independent Restaurant Associations. And, you know, that, as I said, that list is expandable. So anybody else we want to add to that list, I'd rather have the list too large than too small.
In discussing project milestones, County Attorney Jeff Cockrell says the county will need to get community input before nailing down the project's financing. Cockrell says under the current timeline, financing arrangements, such as bonding, should be in place by March of 2019, which means public hearings should be completed by January 2019. Under current projections, construction would begin shortly thereafter, with a projected completion date sometime in 2021.
And if the idea is we want the project to go as efficiently as possible, then that would give a year to do the design and community input phase of that. And I think that's important for everyone to be aware of, is that these are the rough timelines of what we're looking at. And they'll get adjusted over the course of time, and they'll get adjusted in the detail.
Board Chair Weikert and board members Mick Reniason and Jim Murphy will meet with Sun Development in the near future to begin refining the scope and cost of the project. The expansion is currently estimated to cost $72 million and would include a new Embassy Suites hotel. However, the cost of the hotel is expected to be carried separately by the hotel developer, who will manage the expanded convention center. Advisory Board member and County Commissioner Patrick Stoffers says he's perfectly satisfied with the current management. Board member Jim Murphy echoed that sentiment. He points out that the current management has already been vetted.
Again, as you said, and I agree with your comments about being locally managed, because I think we want to stay local as much as we can, because we have that concern and care, and we have a great staff here, and we want the local community to be able to use it, as has been discussed on numerous times. And if I recall, the State Board of Accounts is the one who also set that up with the commission originally, so it's been vetted from them many, many, many years ago.
Board members agree the management staff of the convention center and the new hotel will need to work well together, as the success of each largely depends on the other. It's taken the city and the county more than a decade to get to the point where they actually have funding and a design for the expansion. A study conducted 8 years ago indicates Bloomington is the state's second most popular convention destination.
The City of Bloomington is working to make travel on West Bloomfield Road easier for cyclists and pedestrians. The city began installing a multi-use path on the north side of the road last year, and the work continues today. To continue the project, engineer Neil Copper says the city needs to acquire right-of-way from 8 different land parcels between Patterson Street and Landmark Avenue. Copper told the Board of Public Works on January 23rd that the city's engineering contract with WSP USA will also have to be amended.
We originally thought there may be up to 10 parcels that would be impacted, but we didn't know exactly, so we didn't include appraisals and actual right-of-way acquisition within the original contract. We plan to come back and amend. So now we know there were only 8 parcels, so we had some deduct because we went from 10 down to 8 for some of the work up till now, and then adding in the appraisals and the right-of-way acquisition. So there's a total increase in that design contract of $34,765, bringing their total up to $281,751.04.
All but 2 of the parcel acquisitions are needed to complete improvements at the intersection of Bloomfield and Patterson. Copper says some of the right-of-way acquisitions are temporary.
So the northeast corner at 2nd and Patterson, all of these are kind of small sliver acquisitions. In the northeast corner, we're right at the corner in order to construct our sidewalk improvements, improve the intersection curb ramps. We'll be acquiring a small piece of that corner. In the southeast corner,
that's the glass place there. Glass. Okay.
Yeah, in the southeast corner, it's similar. In order to do the ramp work and tie back into the sidewalk, we have to acquire at the corner and then along part of the sidewalk on the south side of 2nd Street. In the southwest corner, it's only temporary right-of-way acquisition. We have to basically redo that driveway that comes in really close to the intersection. In the northwest corner...
So that goes to a private residence, that one?
It does.
Okay.
We're just going to realign their driveway a little bit so that it doesn't flare out so much at the opening so close to the intersection. So that's 3. In the northwest corner, that supply store, it may only be temporary right-of-way, but regrading their driveway, and then that's where the multi-use path will be along the north side of the road.
Because that's elevated there. That business is
very elevated, yeah.
Up higher. So than the level of the intersection.
Yeah, and this project, if you'll remember, we're actually shifting the curb line of the street a little bit to the south in order to make room for the path so that we don't have to do a whole lot of right-of-way acquisition and a whole lot of grading and tall retaining walls and things like that. But there will at least be some temporary right-of-way acquisition to redo their driveway to make it work.
The project also calls for the installation of traffic signals at both intersections. Construction is expected to continue into 2019. The board approved the acquisitions and contract extension. Later in the meeting, Public Works Director Adam Wason discussed the city's winter de-icing efforts with board member Dana Palazzo.
What I can tell you is this last weekend, the events between, Thursday evening into Friday morning, Sunday into Monday. We used more salt this weekend than we had used all of last year. Van Dievener, our street superintendent, was letting me know. I think we've had 8 semi-trailer loads delivered since Monday to restock our salt barns.
Wow. I mean, the roads have been great, I will say that, in terms of just with the weather and the... Yeah, I think the roads have been really good.
You know, one thing, I'll take this opportunity to make a comment, since we're talking about it. You know, we took some phone calls in at Public Works of, you know, some complaints of road conditions and such. And what the traveling public needs to understand and, you know, residents in Bloomington need to understand, you know, our highest priorities are always going to be, you know, our main thoroughfares, basically, if you can think of... rating every city in the street based on the number of cars that travel it on any given day. That's going to be how our priorities work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not going to be able to clear curb to curb on every single street in the city. You know, we're not going to be able to focus on alleys until everything else is complete. You know, so as far as a level of service, you know, we're never going to reach 100% snow clearance level of service in those types of events, especially over multiple days. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, folks that live on some of the smaller side streets that get very little traffic, you know, we're going to do everything in our power to get through, at least, you know, to clear a travel lane so folks can get out and such.
Wason also squelched a rumor that the city had run out of de-icing salt. In fact, the city had a surplus of salt left over from last year. Board Vice President Kelly Boatman asked Wason whether the city has looked into more environmentally friendly options.
The major issue for us is the capital investment needed to move from a salt product to a brine product where, you know, the beds of the trucks aren't going to, we're going to need to retrofit or buy new trucks and such. So we haven't put a ton of recent research into it, but we did over time here have moved to what we can find as the, you know, designated safest for the environment salt product we could find. So,
okay.
But that is certainly something we've looked at.
According to Wason, the city uses a Cargill's de-icing salt product that is EPA approved.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Former Bloomington Mayor Tommy Allison has her eyes on Senate Bill 326. Allison is watching the redistricting bill as it moves through the State House, hoping that any final implementation will include a nonpartisan, independent redistricting committee. In today's feature report, WFHB's Wes Martin speaks with Allison about what she sees as the potential for political gerrymandering. If Senate Bill 326 redraws electorate districts without independent oversight.
I'm Tommy Allison, and I'm chairman of the local Bloomington League of Women Voters redistricting committee. And I'm also a member of Reverse Citizens United, which is interested in making sure that our vote is counted, and we've been working on the dark money and politics, the trying to reverse Citizens United ruling. But we're really interested in the vote, so we're working on this redistricting. We want to make sure people's vote counts.
Ms. Allison, if you could briefly describe, I believe it's Senate Bill 326.
It's Senate Bill 326, and it passed the Senate Elections Committee by a unanimous vote last week. But this particular bill only addresses the half of what we are interested in. What is missing is a nonpartisan, independent redistricting commission. In other words, rather than have the politicians choose their voters, we want the voters to choose their politicians. So this is, you know, just half of what we need to make sure that we have a fair redistricting where everybody's vote counts. This particular bill, it has a criteria for drawing the districts, but it says that, you know, that you won't split cities or and you won't do certain things, and then they end with, but if the legislature doesn't want to follow that criteria, they can overrule it, you know. So, I mean, even the criteria is not definite. And what is really needed is that the public has access to the documents that are used to draw the maps. And really what you need is non-politicians, non-partisan politicians, and people in office drawing those districts so that people have confidence that they are not drawing them for the advantage of one party or the other. And, you know, both parties do this, but this time what has happened is that the what we'd call a super gerrymandering was done, and we've got this super majority in the state legislature. And what that results in is a no compromise, extreme a bit, you know, there's no moderation. And so and of course, people aren't represented. You know, half the population is not represented. So it's important. It's very important that we get the nonpartisan independent commission. And there is a bill for the House. Now, Ruckel's House, Senator Ruckel's House of Indianapolis, a Republican, did have a bill, Senate Bill 159, that simply didn't get a hearing, that would have had an independent, nonpartisan redistricting commission. But there is a bill in the House, House Bill 1014, again, a Republican, Jerry Torr of Carmel, who would have a independent commission. Now, it has not even been assigned to a committee. And this is the upshot. The organizations, and the organizations are Common Cause, the State League of Women Voters, and many other organizations, have joined together in a coalition, all in for Indiana, and they won't accept that this is enough. This is only half of the problem. It only tells how, not who, will do the districting. They are saying that the way it would stand with the passage of the bill, that they would likely have lawsuits over, just as they've had in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and North Carolina, about gerrymandering. So we still have a little bit of hope, but this bill is only half of the solution.
And you were saying that you would like to see an independent electoral...
An independent, nonpartisan redistricting commission that would actually draw the maps. Then the maps would go to the legislature to be passed. You know, the legislature still would have the yay or nay, but you would have the population, the citizens would have confidence in a fairly drawn map that didn't favor one party or the other, you see. Then if the legislature turns it down, they have to say why they turned it down, you see. But now, the way they put it, it is that the legislature will draw the map, and they'll show it to the public when it's drawn, but they can pass it, and it can be totally gerrymandered. You have a better chance of fairness without either party getting a leg up, if you have a, and many states have this already, that they draw the map so that neither party is favored. You know, it's just simply drawn on a objective basis. And that way you have fairly drawn, and you they turn it down, then they have to explain that they don't like a fairly drawn redistricting map. And believe me, it makes a difference, because what happens is when you have it gerrymandered, you have what is called safe districts. And safe districts mean it would take a supermajority of votes to overcome the gerrymandering. It also means that the person in a safe district doesn't have to pay attention to their constituents at all. The battle, if there's any battle, it's in the primary. That's all. It's an in-party fight, not the whole citizens having a voice in it. These safe districts are evenly divided in this state between the Democrats and the Republicans. And you say, well, how come they've got a supermajority? Well, that's the cleverness of the use of the computer way of being able to draw a district so that you pack voters into one district of one party so that the other party can win other districts by, say, a small majority, even by one vote. And so that you can still have about equal number of safe districts and still have a supermajority of one party. But it's got two things. You know, all of it comes back to is that the voter is not represented. So it's really important for our whole system of government for this fair redistricting be done. And it can only be done with a nonpartisan, independent redistricting commission. And there's all different ways how you select this nonpartisan, independent redistricting commission.
Ms. Allison, is this a red flag to you that the authors of this bill are all Senate Republicans?
To me, it's encouraging. I want the Republicans to do it, and I'm encouraged that Senator Walker, chairman of the commission, realizes that this is an important issue, and he's bringing something forward. And he says it's a baby step in the right direction. Right, but it's only half, and it won't solve the problem. Also, it's encouraged me that Ruckelshaus, a Republican from Indianapolis, the whole bit about having criteria and having an independent redistricting commission, nonpartisan, and also that Representative Jerry Torr, Republican of Carmel, has it in her one in the House. You know, so I'm saying Republicans see the need for this, even though they're benefiting right now from a supermajority. They see the need for this and the fairness of this. I say hooray for them. The only reason that we even have any effort to stop the gerrymandering and get a redistricting is because of citizens calling their representatives, their state representatives. So what I would say is we don't let up. This isn't over on this particular thing. Call your representative. Call them and say you want your vote to count and that you want a independent, nonpartisan redistricting commission and that you want the voters to pick their legislator rather than the legislator pick their voters. It works, but we just have to keep the pressure on.
Tommy Allison, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Well, thank you.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by Danny Graff, Ben Lumsdane, and Scott Schmadtke. Executive producer, Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Shortwave Report with Dan Roberts, a weekly look at headlines from around the world. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.